JC Corcoran Podcast.
Come on down off your sled, Santa, 'cause I'm feeling low and blue. All the folks around here are dead, Santa, and I could use someone to talk to, and it might as well be you. I've been dressing up like you, Santa, at a big department store. I met some little boys and girls, Santa. I brought them home, and they're buried underneath my kitchen floor. You think I'm psycho, don't you, Santa? You think I'm not as good as you? If you think I'm psycho, Santa, there ain't a whole lot you can do. I turned on my radio, Santa, and I heard a big old choir singing pretty Christmas songs, Santa, and it just set my brain on fire. That's my mama over there, Santa, don't get around much since she died. Got my stocking hung with care, Santa. Still got my mama's leg inside. You think I'm psycho, don't you, Santa? You think that I was born to lose? If you think I'm psycho, Santa, there ain't a whole lot you can do. Oh, don't you try to leave, Santa, and don't go near the telephone. It's a lonely Christmas Eve, Santa, and you and I are here alone. They had a party down the street, Santa, they didn't want me coming round. They were sitting down to eat, Santa, and then their house burned to the ground. You think I'm psycho, don't you, Santa? I'm sorry that I broke your leg. You think I'm psycho, don't you, Santa? Santa Claus, I want to hear you beg.
No, I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous, don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest is jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over.
Thursday, December 23rd, 2021, 320 days remaining in our American democratic system that we've come to know and love over these many moons. It's JC here at jcontheline.com. Very interesting last night. I was at a little bit of a Christmas party, quite the wing ding. They were serving great wine, Chateau Montelena, by the way. And it brought up an interesting topic of the movie Bottle Shock. You know, there's a lot of wine lovers listening to this right now. You know nothing about this movie or even this story. And it's pretty cool because this movie, Bottleshock, is an examination, if you will, of the explosion of the California wine industry back in the early 1970s. I didn't even realize until I saw the movie and started doing a little bit of research. I just assumed wine always came from California. And I guess it did to some extent, but I'm talking about the real, real acceptance of American, especially white wine, coming out of Napa, Sonoma, and everything like that. The movie has got a lot of fiction in it, but it's based on a true story. And that story is performed by actors like Bill Pullman, just a great actor, you know, been in so many good things. And then it was one of Chris Pine's first movie. He's almost unrecognizable in this. He's got a blonde, sort of curly, stringy wig out of the whole thing. Eliza Dushku is in this. Dennis Farina, who is in Get Shorty, and, you know, the former Chicago cop who took up acting. The great Alan Rickman is in this movie. Alan Rickman never gave a bad performance in his life. You know, he's like Jeff Bridges. I don't think Jeff Bridges was ever in a movie where he looked bad. Even in movies that weren't that great, his performances were still fantastic. But anyhow, yeah, but this movie is called Bottleshock. And if you're a wine lover and you'll like a good story about California, also the soundtrack from the Doobie Brothers is really cool too. All that upstate and central California stuff. So again, Bottleshock. But anyhow, they were serving Chateau Montelena, which is the name of the winery. And I think I told you this story not too long ago. It's the late 80s, and we're in Hawaii. The hotel, out in front of the hotel, there's a guy handing out these little leaflets, and it said, we're shooting a TV show here on the beach tomorrow. If you think you'd like to be in the crowd to watch all this, you know, come here at like 1 o'clock in the afternoon, whatever the case may be. And, you know, we were busy doing other stuff, and I've been on TV. I don't really need to go sit on the beach and watch somebody do a TV show, but I was curious anyhow. And I could see there was some stuff going on, and I just kept going because I had other things to do. Well, it turns out that this ended up being one of the most watched, most run infomercials back in the late 80s and early 1990s. It was one of these guys who's like, you can buy properties with no money. You know, those guys. And his name was Dave Del Dotto. Dave Del Dotto. And he became a millionaire multiple times over as a result of those infomercials that were shot outside of our hotel back in like 1989. Now, like I said, the guy makes a fortune doing this and then sets up one of the best wineries in all of the Napa-Sonoma area out in Central California. You know, whether it's here in Missouri, in Augusta or something like that, or if you go to, you know, the actual wine country in California, then you know you have these little samples, and they stick a little thing, looks like a turkey baster, into the barrel, and they draw out a tiny little bit, and it's like, you know, a 16th of an inch. They give this to you in the glass, and you sample all these different wines. Well, at the Del Dotto Winery, which, by the way, is absolutely beautiful, and then you go down into the catacombs, and like these little votive candles, and the wine is just aging down there, and it's just really, really something to see. But outside the place, we couldn't understand why there were so many taxis. This was before, you know, Uber and Lyft. All these taxi cabs out there, what's going on? Well, it turns out that for whatever reason, at the Del Dotto Winery, what they draw out of the barrel for your sample is like the size of half of a glass of wine. So after an afternoon of sampling all these wines, you can understand why the nickname of the place is not Del Dotto, but Del Blotto, because people are so wasted afterwards, and the taxis are there to take them back to their hotels and their Airbnbs and all that sort of stuff because they're too wasted to drive. Boy, but that's a great trip if you ever get a chance to go. The other trip I always tell people about, well, first of all, I know people from St. Louis who've never even been to Chicago. And it's like, come on, come on. Get out of this hutch here and go look around the rest of the country. But the other one that I always tell people is, if you've got a baseball fan in your family, and I am so glad that I was able to get my dad to this thing before he passed away, and that is the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. You gotta go. If you're any kind of a baseball fan at all, you gotta go. And, you know, they have a lot of, again, these bed and breakfasts, Airbnb stuff, a couple of hotels. I don't remember the food being particularly good up there. But, you know, you fly into Albany, And then from there, it's about an hour and 40-minute drive, I would imagine. And you're in the wilds of upstate New York. And then you start to see the outskirts of the community, and you get closer in, you know, all these bed and breakfasts and everything. And then, you know, you're standing there. You've heard about the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown a million times. And now there it is, and you're looking right at it. And I always tell people, you know, make sure you set aside 2 days. It's a two-day thing if you want to see everything and not be rushing. And why would you rush anyhow? There's a beautiful lake there if the weather is nice. You know, you can sit out there, and it's just, you know, you got usually somebody's in town doing autographs, you know, baseball card, little tiny little shops and things. But you know, something that looks very unassuming. There's a little sign out in front that says Pete Rose is going to be signing baseballs on that particular day. Yeah, me talking baseball here. Why? Well, only because it feels like baseball weather. There have been opening days, a lot of opening days at Busch Stadium, where the weather wasn't even close to being this nice. You know, temperatures in the 30s with little ice pellets coming down, and it's like, welcome to opening day in the Midwest. And again, this is all well and good. Not very Christmassy, but I guess if you're not going to have snow, clearly not going to have any snow. If you're not going to have snow, they might as well have this. The only problem being that while we're enjoying this beautiful weather, unfortunately, one of these summers, you know, it's going to start getting up to like 130 degrees, and then we're going to be really fucked. So yeah, I enjoy the nice weather too, but with a giant asterisk next to my comment, all right? The only problem with any kind of trip like that is the rental car industry, or as I prefer to refer to it, the rental car racket. There's a couple of things like that, and I will also throw in rental trucks into that whole thing. You ever driving along and you're thinking to yourself, how am I going to move all this stuff next month? And then you see one of these U-Hauls go by with a big sign on the side that says $19 a day. And you're like, well, I can afford $20 to rent a truck. That won't be bad. That's what I'll do. And then you go in and you start signing and initialing stuff. And it's going 100 miles an hour. And you're right, initial here, initial here, initial here, sign here, sign here, sign here. Here's the keys, blah, blah, blah. And you go and you use the truck on that day and you bring it back. And they scribble out the bill, and they print it for you. Okay. And it's like $190. What happened in 1995? So that's a racket. Obviously, the funeral industry. Don't even get me started on that. But this rental car industry thing, same thing. Not long ago, I rented a car, and the guy, the agent at the desk says, now there's no smoking in the car. If you are smoking in the car, you forfeit your deposit, blah, blah. Yeah, I understand that. I don't smoke. Okay, fine. I go out, get in the car, and the inside of the car reeks of cigarette smoke. In the words of Saturday Night Live's Kenan Thompson, that's how they get you. By the way, speaking of cars, you know, I'm one of those people who cannot shop online for most things, especially clothes. I just can't do it. I got to feel the fabric. I got to sort of get the idea of how it feels. I don't like loose wrists on sweaters. If it's got a loose wrist, you know, like a straight thing that comes down, isn't sort of tapered to fit your wrist, there's no way I can wear that. We all have our little oddities, you know, and things that are deal breakers. And I'm the same with buying a car. You know, I want to talk to a human being. You know, I don't want some sort of hokey sales pitch. Nobody does. But I do want to ask questions about the car, just curiosities about what he knows about this particular model. What have you heard from people who have bought these things? You know, that sort of stuff. Well, I had a friend who recently bought a car on one of those. It was like Auto Trader. Is that what it is? And they deliver the car and he starts driving it. And the thing is like seriously pulling to the left. Well, again, now what do you do? You weren't dealing with any human being. You were dealing with a website. It's like trying to reach Facebook. You know, it's impossible. But somehow he managed to get a hold of somebody, and he explains the situation. He says, there's something wrong with this car, and I had a mechanic look at it, and the mechanic said, get rid of this car. It's not even safe. So that's why I'm calling you, and what are you going to do? And the guy says to him, well, just so you understand ahead of time, we never take back a car, which is an interesting statement to make, especially as it applies to customer service. So in other words, you take what we give you, and if there's something wrong with it, tough shit, that's what you'll be driving for the next several years. So my friend says to the guy, after he, the guy tells him, we never take back a car, he says, well, this then will be the exception to the rule. And he kept calling, and he kept complaining, and he kept writing letters, and all of a sudden, they got him a new car. But see, you shouldn't have to go through that. You should not have to go through that. That's like a live human being, because then you can call the guy up and go, hey, wait a minute, the heater's not working, or something like that. Speaking of which, the heater working. Did I mention this weather's not right for late December? It's Christmas.
Christmas in Las Vegas. Decorate your tree with chips. Let's roll a yo beneath the mistletoe while that angel strips. Rudolph sold the sled, now he's betting on red in a casino made out of gingerbread. Christmas in Las Vegas, it's a trip. The wise men are rolling sevens, the elves are doubling down. Light a candle and pull the handle, I love that jingling sound. Every showgirl and boy ride in a sleigh of joy, pulled by eight tiny tigers eating Siegfried and Roy. Christmas in Las Vegas, what a town. Santa brought me two aces, I wonder if I should split. Hey waitress, bring me a drink while I think, what would Jesus hit? The strip lights are all twinkling, there's no room at the inn. But because 'tis the season, they'll comp a suite for Mary at the Wynn. Christmas in Las Vegas, it's Bethlehem with bling. Let's hope the dealer brings four newborn kings, 'cause my baby needs a brand new pair of five golden rings. Christmas in Las Vegas really swings. Cha-cha-cha-ching. I said Christmas in Las Vegas really swings.
Yo, yo, yo.
You said it, Santa. Merry Christmas, everybody. Thank you. Good night.
And while you're having, images of sugar plums dancing in your heads and just celebrating Christmas like anybody would and everybody does, there's stuff going on that is truly mind-boggling. And I'm going to play this thing for you from the network news the other night, and then we'll talk about it a little bit here. But the question becomes, and you may ask yourself this same question as you're listening to this, what if?
On Christmas Eve, NASA plans to launch the James Webb Space Telescope into orbit, the first step in a million-mile journey that could literally give us a look at the very beginning of time. NBC's Jake Ward has more in our Sunday Spotlight.
For more than three decades, the Hubble telescope has been beaming back mind-blowing images from some of the furthest reaches of space. Incredible insight into our very place in the universe. Now, its successor, the James Webb Telescope, will build on that exploration with 100 times the reach, possibly back to the very beginning. The Webb Telescope has already traveled nearly 6,000 miles by truck and boat from California through the Panama Canal to its launch pad in Guyana. Now, the most expensive spacecraft in human history just has about 1 million miles to go. When we saw it, it was folded up and ready for shipping.
What will that thing look like when it unfolds in space? Well, here it is. This part alone is 21 feet across.
The largest component is a 5-layer sun shield, each sheet the thickness of a human hair to protect it against the sun.
Between the hot side, so the side, look on the bottom, that's right, where the satellite is, that sits at about plus 185 degrees Fahrenheit. The cold side sits at about minus 400 degrees Fahrenheit.
Wow.
In orbit, it will unfold itself, deploy its antenna, and then launch away from us and our sun until it's roughly 1 million miles from Earth. There, with its back to Earth, it will scan the universe in one huge yearly circle. Hubble was built to see light the way you and I do, but the James Webb Telescope can also see infrared light, heat, basically, that our eyes can't detect.
So by looking at the infrared, we'll be able to look at that light coming from the very beginnings of the universe, back to 13.7 something billion years ago.
The afterglow of the formation of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let me try to explain that part. When the sun warms my face like it's doing right now, that light is actually about 8 minutes old. That's because it takes that long for light to travel from our nearest star here to us. But when I look at light from other stars, what I'm looking at is light that has traveled sometimes thousands of years.
Scientists from around the world are already lining up to use Webb's data, and with good reason. We know, for instance, that there are exoplanets out there, worlds that are the right size and close enough to their stars that they might have life on them. But scientists have never been able to truly see what they look like until Webb.
We're going to look and start checking, what's the temperature? Is it like Earth? Is there water in the atmosphere? How much is the content of it like Earth in any way?
Webb is so powerful, we'll be able to see whether distant planets have the stuff of life on them, or whether life might be possible in other environments entirely. An awe-inspiring mission. From our fragile place on this tiny planet, sending our species' most complicated scientific instrument to see how not just life, but the universe itself began. For Sunday Today, Jake Ward, Planet Earth.
Now that's a fascinating report, but did you catch yourself asking yourself, what if they really find something? And what if they do? And would they even tell us? I mean, there's a lot of people who think that these, hundreds of thousands of UFO sightings that people have been reporting for the last 70 years, and they initially it's like, oh, it's just a bunch of crackpots out there. Military people, Navy guys, Tom Cruise up there flying around, those type of guys. And they're like, we don't know what it was, but it just was following us. And then it shot across the landscape and then it disappeared. And then the one that was from about a year ago, I guess, where the one just like went into the water and just kept going, which would mean that whatever was flying that thing had figured out a way to not care that one thing is air and one thing is water. So, but there's a lot of people who think that this whole thing's been planned all along and that this represents a slow conditioning of the American people and the people really in the entire world as to the idea that there might be something else out there. And eventually they're going to have to tell us. They're going to have to spill the beans and really tell us everything, and will this be the one? Will they get that thing out there? And it's my understanding that the pictures and images and things are going to start coming back not too far into 2022. Oh, and by the way, I just found out that the thing was supposed to launch tomorrow night and they have to delay it. So I'll find out the details on that. But it doesn't lessen the importance of the story at all. So would they tell us? They get that thing out there and it points at the beginning of time and we finally find out everything about where we came from. And it might be something that would be jarring to the psyche of an entire planet. Would they tell us? I say no. Maybe like a lot of things, that's redacted. So it's like, here's the report. And it looks like a 7-year-old went nuts on a piece of paper with a magic marker. And everything good is blacked out. Something to keep in the back of your head, I guess you'd say. And here's something I didn't know. Mars, it turns out, has its own Grand Canyon, 5 times deeper and 20 miles wider than what we have here. And researchers think they found significant amounts of water in it. It's underground and the water is probably ice. So, we're not talking lakes here, but it's still a big deal. Everybody wondered, is there going to be some sort of life on Mars? And if you got water, pretty good chance of life. In other space news, NASA released footage shot by a probe that flew through the sun's upper atmosphere a few months ago. It shows a stream of highly energized particles zipping by with the Milky Way in the background. If I find that picture or those images, I will be posting them immediately. How about some bug news? Researchers in Australia found the first true millipede. The word millipede, by the way, means 1,000 feet, not a million. Until now, we've never found one with more than 750 legs, and this one's got 1,306. It's the most legs of any living animal.
We spent the whole first few moments of the podcast today talking about the weather and how this isn't right for late December. Here's some more climate news. A lot of these people been getting a lot quieter lately. These congressmen and senators, these people bought off by the oil and gas industry and everything like that, to stand out on the floor of the United States Congress and say, hey, here's a snowball. How can you have global warming if there's a snowball? You know, that sort of stupid stuff. Okay. Well, a glacier as big as Florida might break apart in the next 3 years and eventually raise sea levels by 2 to 10 feet. And a study found that ocean bacteria is evolving to eat plastic because we're dumping so much of that stuff in the water that the ecosystem in the ocean has figured out a way to eat the plastic. And a team in California got footage of a barrel-eye fish that lives 2,000 feet below the surface, and it has a see-through head, just like the Kardashians. And a study at Arizona State found that stress drives women to binge drink more than men. So, guys, maybe you want to help out around the house a little bit more? And the most dangerous toy you can buy your kid for Christmas, a Razor scooter. They've caused over 190,000 injuries in the past five years. 190,000. Balls are next. 108,000 injuries a year just from a ball. That includes footballs, baseballs, and every other type of ball. So the fact that scooters have racked up almost twice as many victims is pretty impressive. Toys like, the little cars, Hot Wheels, are next, especially if you're walking if you're walking across a hardwood floor in the middle of the night and you come down on one of those things. So Hot Wheels, followed by building sets that come with small pieces, choking hazards. You know, because kids, especially really little kids, just put everything they see right in their mouth. So got to watch out for that. Frisbees and boomerangs are fifth. Now, if the wind is right and you're really accomplished, you can do that thing where you can throw a frisbee and it'll do a whole boomerang effect and come right back to you. I was able to do that, you know, when I was in my 20s. I don't think I could do it now, but I don't see a lot of boomerangs out there unless, I mean, they're in fifth place tied with frisbees. So somebody's using boomerangs, and we did in the 80s go a little Australian crazy there, you know, because Crocodile Dundee came out, and you had Men at Work, you know, Colin Hay, coming from the land down under, and everybody knew what a Vegemite sandwich was before the internet. Sixth place, games and game parts, followed by dolls, action figures, toy boxes or chests, tricycles, and balloons. I'm not sure I like this list. I think I would prefer David Letterman's.
Here tonight, ladies and gentlemen, top 10 most dangerous toys. Listen carefully. Here we go. Number 10, the hula noose. Number 9, Professor Sodom's little biological warfare kit. Number 8, light me on fire Elmo. Number 7, shoots ladders and open manhole covers. Number 6, Mattel ass rocket. The problem right there, that ass rocket. Number 5, rabid Snoopy. Number 4, the too big for my windpipe jigsaw puzzle. Number 3, Mr. Potato Head multiple outlet strip. Number 2, Linda Tripp's Let's Tape Daddy portable tape recorder. And the number 1 most dangerous toy, Easy Bake Open Flame Oven.
Mattel ass rocket. All right, that's a good place to stop. Thursday, December 23rd, 2021, 320 days remaining in the American democratic system as we have done it. We publish every Monday through Friday at about 7 o'clock St. Louis time, and we archive everything right here at jconline.com. Christmas show tomorrow, then a couple of days off before we rejoin you next week. So we'll be here tomorrow. Maybe you will be too. And please do a great job, as you've been doing, about letting people know that we are here at the J.C. Corcoran Podcast every weekday morning at jconline.com. Have a great day. In the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.